So your home didn't sell the first time. Are you fed up? It's time to make a change. Hire the Selling with CC team to get your home sold. We like houses to sell, not sit. To schedule an appointment, go to sellingwithcc.com.
Andrew Gibson back with you now on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM. Let's talk some Braves baseball with Chris Domino. He's on mornings on 680 The Fan, the flagship station of the Atlanta Braves, and he joins us right now. Chris, how you doing, man?
Doing well, Andrew. Thank you very much. How about you?
Doing well, man. Just excited for the Braves and excited for this baseball season to get underway. It's been sort of a rocky start for the Braves, Chris. 1-5 for the first six games for the Braves. From your vantage point following this team and this club closely, what have been the problems so far for Atlanta?
I think I'm supposed to say, you name it, it's been a problem because, you know, they've booted away games. Their margin of error, look, this is now a team that can make up for multiple mistakes in a game. Multiple mistakes is if your pitchers walk eight guys, you're letting somebody go through their lineup again. You hit into a bunch of double plays. Runners in scoring position, you've really done nothing positive at this point. You play close games. Bullpen hasn't necessarily helped. You've had a few good starts from Tehran. You had a good start from Cologne. That wasn't terrible, but you didn't find a way to win. And ultimately, at the end of the day, they keep score for a reason. And they really have put themselves in holes. The double play stuff was ridiculous. Pass balls. Again, the runners in scoring position, not taking advantage when you had a man on third with less than two outs. All the things that you would say, well, why didn't you find a way? They've lost a whole bunch of moments so far in the first six games that's put them in the position they're in right now.
Chris Domino, mornings on 680, the Fan from Atlanta, joins us right now. You know, Chris, when I look at the last couple of games for Atlanta, you know, they lost a series against the Pirates, but those games were pretty close, Chris, 5-4, 6-4, and then ultimately 6-5, just losing close ball games.
Yeah, but I'll give you this. Like, my whole thing is, one of the statistics that you don't want to sort of have, you don't want to be at the top of the list on, is the one-run losses. Because you can tell me, well, look, there must be a good sign in that, but I'm also going to tell you, you didn't find a way to win. You didn't find a way to win those types of games. And if you do that over the course of a season, it's just a little bit easier for the other guy to find a way to win in the seventh, eighth, and ninth. I can look at run differentials. I can throw fake numbers, numbers that guys make up in their basement to tell you how good a baseball player is or a team is. I'll look at what you do close and late. If you're the better team in the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning, you have a better chance to win games by a lot these days because starting pitchers don't go 8-9 anymore. I didn't agree with Brian Snicker the other night. He took out Julio Teheran after throwing 87 pitches in seven innings because even at 80%, 85%, he was better than anybody you were going to take out of your bullpen. You end up losing that game. I just think there are things that when you just miss, you're not building up an ability to just make at the end, you know, over the course of the long haul. And you don't have to be the best team for nine innings. You know, especially in these days, you have to win moments, and they just really haven't won enough moments so far in the first week plus.
Brian Snitker, of course, taking over on a full-time basis as the manager of the Braves. How do you feel about Snit, Chris?
Well, I love him. You know, in a lot of ways, there's, you know, Bobby Cox, you know, when you have Bobby Cox's resume, i.e. you go to the Hall of Fame, you don't want to do comparisons, but personality-wise, I like him pregame. I like him postgame. I think he's okay with somebody like me or you or anybody sitting in the stands not necessarily agreeing with him about a certain move. But at the end of the day, players wanted him here. Freddie Freeman, you know, he's not a young guy anymore. He's a veteran. He was fifth in the MVP in voting in the National League last year. He's got a little pull. He's your highest paid player. He, both outwardly, publicly, and privately, went to the powers that be and said, I want that guy to be the manager. Now, it didn't mean he got a three-year deal. He's on a one-year deal. But he became the manager, and I think players are much more relaxed. You know, the 20-10 to finish up over the last 30 games, 500 over the last 100 or so, second or third best offense in the National League for an extended period of time, there was a reason for optimism. I don't necessarily believe things carry over from season to season, and, you know, nobody's looking to jump off a building at 1-5, but you don't want to blow whatever momentum you had. This spring, they were really loose. They felt good. They're going to score runs. I said they're going to win game 7-5. They're going to lose game 7-5. But you want those to be clean games. You get 27 outs, I get 27 outs. So far, really, they've played way too many games where their strikeout numbers were up and the double play numbers were up. They're playing less than a clean 27. And the other guy at times is getting more than 27 outs in a game.
Chris, there are a lot of Braves fans here in North Florida and South Georgia. And they follow this team and they look at some of the names on this roster. Atlanta has really brought in sort of a new crop of guys, some veterans mixed in with some of these young guys. Where do you think the Braves are with this roster right now?
Yeah, look, they're in a one-year stopgap, and how do I know that? They can call it a rebuild. They can call it whatever they want at this point. Fans can call it whatever they want. But you brought in three veteran pitchers on one-year deals. Ari Dickey has an option year for the second, but I don't really expect him to hit it. So you spent $31.5 million to get more than 500 innings if things play out well. If one or two of them pitch well and the Braves aren't necessarily in contention, you might be able to flip those guys. You give young guys in the minor leagues who, quite honestly, some of them weren't able to handle it last year and physically unable to handle it. I think mentally unable to handle it. You give them a couple of extra months in the minor leagues this year, and if you trade one or two of those veterans, those guys then have an opportunity to move up. I just think with Phillips, he's a free agent at the end of this year, and you're only paying $1 million. I think with the three arms that you got, I think you actually did. You know, the Ender and Chiarca deal is a good one. It's a really good one in terms of if there is such a thing when you sign a guy to $30-plus million, you got a right. bargain. Relatively speaking, he is that. So I think he's stable. I think Freddie Freeman's stable. I think Swanson's stable. I think third base, second base, you got to figure out what it is you want to do. Marcakis has one more year after this. It's going to be interesting. Kemp's got a couple. It's not a young team. You know, a lot of people just said, well, look, your minor leagues are so young, they must be a young team. No, they're young below the surface. You know, the 25-man roster is like the tip of the iceberg, the only part that you see above the water. Most of it's below. Most of it we don't see and we only talk about when a deal is done or a guy gets really hot or a guy comes up and doesn't do well and you send him back down. I just think they knew the 2017 opening up the new ballpark. If they score runs and the bullpen stays healthy, less taxed, they'll have a chance to win more games than they have in the last couple of years. That's good news. But I don't think anybody thought this was the year they make a run or a legitimate run for 162. I think it's the year that if you roll out your glove on any given night, you can win that game. I still feel that way. But again, I think offensively you'll score enough runs a lot of nights to do that. But I think this is sort of the stopgap year. Get your young arms in shape. Figure out which ones are actually supposed to be elevated in 18 and 19. And then if it works right and you lose some of the money on your salary situation in this ballpark, SunTrust Park, the Battery, if it brings in a revenue that everybody hopes it does, then I think you'll see the payroll go up on top of that.
Chris Domino with us on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. You mentioned a lot of the veterans that were brought in here. I actually had a chance to talk to R.A. Dickey at spring training in Orlando. And you know, he brought up the fact that that was one of the biggest reasons he signed here in Atlanta was because of Brian Snitker, the conversations that he had with him, and just felt comfortable with him as his manager.
Look, R.A. Dickey wasn't on Toronto's playoff roster last year. I don't know if he had a moment of thinking about retirement, but I think a couple of things had to be in play. Lives in Nashville. This is the closest opportunity to Nashville to play. Snicker, Phil Niekro, Bobby Cox all went out and did a recruit job on him. They said, look, we want you here. We still think you can get guys out. I think you're going to enjoy playing here. We'll treat you like a veteran, which means Brian Snicker is going to treat you like a man, which, by the way, is a Bobby Cox thing. I used to say about Bobby, he'll treat you like a man until you prove he can't handle it. I think this group is going to prove they can handle it, which is why Snicker is going to be good in that room. But I think he was given an opportunity to find out. National League, no DH. You know, what might be a little bit different? We don't know how the ballpark's going to play, but he's going to have some starts in the new ballpark. I just think the challenge was really there for him. He certainly knows the National League East a little bit. You know, he won a Cy Young Award not too long ago here with the New York Mets. I don't think it made sense for him to retire. Now, you throw $10 million at a guy, too. You know, I'll crawl out of my deathbed to make sure that I can make whatever amount of starts I have to make at that point. But I do think they wanted him here, and they explained to him, this is what we're doing this year. You fit in. Would you like to come play some baseball in Atlanta? And I think personality-wise, the people that he was going to be playing for, Snicker most of all, I think it all worked out in that regard.
Let me ask you about another veteran that was brought in, Bartolo Colon, a guy that, look, he's 43 years old, Chris. He's still getting it done. He took a no decision against his former team, the Mets, in Game 2 for the Braves. How's this guy getting it done, man?
So, look, he's sort of the Mariano Rivera Trevor Hoffman of starters. He's basically got one pitch. You know what's coming, and he's actually still good enough at it that it gets you out more often than not. He can't think, it was 15 wins last year. I mean, that's absurd. I don't get it. He didn't have a great spring, and everybody just said, well, maybe that's it. And then it's only one start, but it was a good six innings. He throws strikes. He throws them where he wants to throw them. You know, we laughed. Kurt Suzuki, who caught both Dickey and Bartolo Colon, he could have left his fingers in the clubhouse. You don't need fingers with those guys. You know what they're going to throw. It's just a matter of where it's going to go after it leaves their hand. I don't know how he does it. Another guy, $13 million. I mean, I want you to think about that. If I would have told you 20 years ago, and he just celebrated his 20th anniversary, if I would have said Bartolo Colon's going to weigh whatever he weighs, 265, 270, higher, 280, 20 years, if you were in a Wayback Machine 20 years ago, you would have said, okay, is he playing softball or is he just sort of sitting on a beach somewhere? He's still getting people out to the tune of $13 million. It's two things. It'll tell you there's a dearth of starting pitching, but he's been good enough. You know, here's the one. Use this one if you want. In the last 4 years, he's won 62 games. Max Scherzer, Bumgarner, and Kershaw are the only three that I could find, real quick doing the math, who've won more than that. Not Price, not Chris Sale, not Arrieta. He's won 62 games in his last 4 years, and Bumgarner's won three more than him, and Kershaw's won only two more than him. And I know wins are sort of arbitrary, but you still got to put yourself and your team in a position to win, and he's done it now. As good, at least as good and consistently as anybody around baseball in the last four seasons.
Chris, I still cannot believe the Braves pulled off the trade for Dansby Swanson with Arizona. What do you notice about him? He's going to be a star.
Really high baseball IQ, cares more about team than he does about himself. Look, he knows eventually the face of the franchise. He's a good-looking local kid, number one overall pick. Braves can't believe he was included in an Arizona deal. I'll go this far. Dave Stewart, the GM of Arizona, it wasn't good with everything else that had happened, but I think he specifically lost his job because Dansby Swanson's now here in Atlanta and the Shelby Miller deal. I just think he's a guy who wants to be really good, not because it means you get your face on a billboard, but because it means that you're doing something that matters. I think being a good teammate matters. I think figuring out how to be a good two-hole hitter matters. I think making the play that you're supposed to make at shortstop to help your team out, that matters. I can tell you, I've gotten to know him a little bit. I know his agent really well. And it is about, you know, sort of being a little bit beyond your years. You look at Francisco Lindor, you look at Correa. The shortstop position is stacked with young guys. There are young guys all around baseball who can play. I think he wants to, by the end of this year, be included in that list. You can be the number one pick and have people put you on that list before you played or really gotten out of your rookie status. I think that's nice. I think he thinks that's sort of nice, but I don't think he thinks that it matters until you play enough games and do enough things in games that matter that you're supposed to be included on that list. I like that. It's not a given. You don't hand things to guys like this. They go out and take them or earn them. I think that's the way he's going to play the game for a bunch of years to come.
Tell me about SunTrust Park, Chris. The Braves' home opener is coming up on Friday against the San Diego Padres at 7:35, and this is going to be the first time that the Braves have opened up a new stadium in 20 years since moving on from Turner Field.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I can't wait to see a playoff game there because that'll mean that down here I would have seen a playoff game in three different parks, and some people would say that's a bad thing. I'm a capitalist. I do know why they did it this way. I do know what they're looking to do is the live-work-play community. I think it's a moneymaker if done right, and I don't think that's a bad thing for the Atlanta Braves. I've been over there a bunch of times while it was being constructed. It's not a retrofit anything. It's a baseball park. And look, the ultimate goal is you go to Camden and you go to Arlington and you go to Colorado and you go to all the places and you try to figure out. You also, by the way, you go to NFL stadiums and NBA arenas to try to figure out what it is you want to do, every bit as much as what you don't want to do. And if you do it right, for the next 20 years, people come to your ballpark and take some of the things that you've done. I love sitting in outfield seats. In right field, they've got this chop house that's three stories high. You can stand outside and watch a game. Great view. They've got, in front of the Hank Aaron Terrace, there's no 755 Club. The Hank Aaron Terrace is there. There's hangover seats in left field. That looks sort of old ballparkish. 41,000 seats, 12,000 less than the other building. Much more intimate. Sight lines are better. Chairs are sort of leaned the right way, moved the right way. They found that out in some of the earlier ballparks after Camden included, that they didn't necessarily figure out seat angles. Here they did. Internet, the Wi-Fi, all those things that you were hoping for in the bells and whistles. This team knows, and everybody now knows in sports, you can't just sell a seat. You have to sell the high five. You have to sell the social experience. There's a whole bunch of that that's going to be going on before games and after games, and there was none of that at Turner Field. You know, people, I did a national show and it was found out that the Braves were moving after only 20 years in Turner. And I said, listen, what you don't understand is this. Where the old stadium was is there's a parking lot. And if you spun around three different times in that parking lot and you wanted to see personally invested dollars, as far as your eye could see, you would see none. Zip, zilch. It was done down there. Nobody was going to build up what it is they wanted to build up to do what you have to do now, sell a social experience. The Battery, it's sort of like a Main Street a little bit. It's a mini version of Disney, where at the end the Magic Castle is there for a reason. They want you to buy products on the way in. They want you to buy products on the way out. And oh yeah, while you're here, go visit Cinderella. That's what the baseball part of it is. I mean, look, it's a money thing, no doubt about it, but they have a chance to do more and put more in the coffers where hopefully if they invest it back in the team, everybody's going to see it out on the field.
Chris D'Amato, final moments with you here on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM. Let's sneak a football question in real quick, Chris. I know with the Falcons fans, I mean, I'm one included. You don't ever get over what happened in the Super Bowl. You just got to kind of move past it and just move on to the next season. What is the feeling in Atlanta right now, and where do you think they should go with the 31st pick in the draft?
Well, so let's talk about what's going on in the city. I think there are a lot of people who are not over it. I think there are a lot of people who won't be over it. People will tell you if you win a Super Bowl, then maybe you get over this one. I don't know. When they had to break out the books to figure out how historically bad that collapse was, that's not a good sign. I hearken back to the idea that what galls people in this city quite a bit is the fact that the New Orleans Saints have a Super Bowl and the Falcons don't. And Thursday night in New England to start the season, I'm going to raise a fifth banner, whether you're in the building or not, to be determined by the schedule makers. I just think it's sort of one of those where you go, you can't get back that moment. You just can't. There's going to be nothing that replaces the idea of what just happened. Oh, my God. If there's a 17-point lead in the playoff game to come, what is it they're going to say? Oh, don't forget about the Falcons-Patriots game. You have to live with that. There was a random morning. I'm in the studio at 4:10 in the morning watching SportsCenter, and Stan Verrett from the California SportsCenter, he said, well, how did that work out for the Falcons? It had nothing to do with the Atlanta Falcons, but that's what you have to live with now. You're sort of in that category of, oh, yeah, people are going to bring this up at random moments. Doesn't feel good. But at the end of the day, we were with Matt Ryan yesterday. I'm going to meet with Dan Quinn again tomorrow. I just think that if you don't turn the page, you're going to find yourself sort of, you know, you're going to be stuck in mud. Players can't afford it. I think fans can feel that way. I feel that way. I told you, I sat in that airport on Monday, and it was the most god-awful feeling. It was unbelievable to say, I'm going home to whatever is going to be said for the next months, years, and I'm not going to a parade on Tuesday down Peachtree. That one you don't get back. I just think as an organization, whether it pisses you off, whether it's, you know, motivation, whether it's we need to turn the page, but we're good enough to do it to get back there. I think even the top guys in this team know you're guaranteed nothing. You're owed nothing. You're not owed your health. They were healthy last year. They signed Julio. They made breaks for themselves. The offense was certainly good enough. Your defense found a way to be good enough. I just know that it's not easy to get back to a Super Bowl, and everybody in that building, while you might think the arrow is pointing up, and relatively speaking, it certainly is going into this year, you're not guaranteed your opportunity to get a chance to get back and make up for that. And in terms of picks, I don't know. The Trufant deal is done. I think you're okay at corner. Collins is going to be an interesting situation, whether you trust him enough to be a guy who plays more. Poole was a nice surprise. You don't need running backs. Maybe you're looking at a tight end somewhere in the second or third round if you think you can upgrade that position. Defensive lineman, offensive guard, they need a right guard. I don't want to pay too much in the first, second, or third round. I think you get those guys later. I'm looking at a guy like Jabril Peppers, and I just think he's sort of a Dan Quinn-type guy. There's a kid Cunningham out of Vanderbilt that you look at and you go, there certainly seems – I think linebacker's the way you got to go more than any position. I think Peppers is a guy that you sort of move up and back between safety and maybe even playing a little bit of linebacker to just roll downhill and hit people. I think that's the type of player they're looking for. So if I'm going to take my guess, it's that before the guard situation, and it's a linebacker, maybe a hard-hitting safety, and then something on the offensive line if I'm going to guess on April, whatever today is.
All right, Chris, could do it all day, man. We always appreciate the time.
Thanks, Andrew. Thanks very much.